It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum number 50 and greetings from Sydney. Whereas I walked to work this morning, I heard this extraordinary thing. It's not something that you would hear in the United States, I don't think. And it's not something, with the current president anyway, and it's not something that you would certainly not hear in the United Kingdom. Just listen to this.
Freedoms as Christians in this country, and they should be protected. Australia is a free country. There's nothing more fundamental than the freedom of belief, whatever that belief might be, whether you have one or you don't. It might be a different religion, it might be a different faith, but the freedom to believe is so important. And that needs to be nourished and it needs to be protected.
That was Prime Minister Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister of Australia, speaking this weekend at Hillsong. The Hillsong Conference in front of 21,000 people. It really is quite remarkable. He's professing his faith in Jesus. He's saying that Australia needs God. And he's coming across actually very well. Now, some people would say, don't speak at Hillsong. But for me, I was just astounded that he was doing that. And I'm very encouraged by it. And let me tell you how that encouragement works out. So I was in a shop seeing someone about something to do with moving here. And the Chinese lady who was speaking to me found out I was a pastor and started talking about how she didn't go to church, but how she really admired the Prime Minister Scott Morrison, who she said he's a man of faith and that's what we need in today's society, which is in such a mess. As I said, it was quite remarkable. And do pray for Scott and for other Christians who are involved in government. Now, this kind of thing is reported here. And what I was intrigued to read is an article we put a link to, as we do with all the articles, all the things that you hear. If you go onto the blog, you will get these links. And it's a link to an article by Greg Sheridan, who's the foreign editor of The Australian, one of Australia's most respected journalists. And he recently has been writing a lot about Christianity. And in this article, he's asking, is Christianity making a comeback in the West? He's been visiting in London, and he visited Nikki Gumbel and some other things as well. And I love this little phrase he asks. The question is whether the two Bromptons, and he's talking about a traditional Catholic and Holy Trinity Brompton, whether the two Brompton churches and all the other signs of life in contemporary British Christianity are really signs of hope, maybe of a turn at last, or are they really more like crowded lifeboats bobbing around in the wake of a sinking ocean liner? That is a very good way of putting it. Fascinating how that is in mainstream media here, and just little by little it's creeping into mainstream media in the United States, or rather in the United Kingdom. And more of that thoughtful analysis is appearing in the United States as well. I honestly believe that these are signs of hope. Now, in that article, Sheridan mentions the growing power of Islam in Europe and how there are as many young Muslims on the streets of London and Paris as there are young Anglicans or young Christians. I wrote an article for Christian Today, which you can, again, access online, about Islamophobia and the way that this is being used to silence debate and the way that this is being used to introduce a new blasphemy law. And then I came across this piece from our friend Brendan O'Neill, who many of whose things personally I struggle with, but many of them, even more of them, I actually really enjoy. And this is one that I really enjoy. He's explaining what the difference is between anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. Spot on.
My unpopular view is that it's not really appropriate to compare anti-Semitism and Islamophobia from the point of view that anti-Semitism is one of the oldest hatreds in the world and has led to the deaths of millions upon millions of people over thousands of years, whereas Islamophobia is a relatively recently invented term that's largely used, I think, to chill open discussion about aspects of Islam and issues to do with radical Islam in particular.
Now let's move on to another subject, and that's the whole question of Christians in politics, especially, well, we've already mentioned Scott Morrison in the United States. We know Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States. Sorry, Scott Morrison in the Australian. Oh, it's a jet lag. It's getting to me, honestly. But Scott Morrison in Australia and Mike Pence, Vice President of the United States. Well, in the United Kingdom, there are a significant number of Christians or politicians who profess to be Christian, like Theresa May. One such is Ian Blackford, who sometimes attends the Free Church, my own denomination, in Skye. But here's my problem with a lot of these politicians, is they profess Christianity in public, if you like, but what they do, the actions that they take as well, sometimes deny that. And again, I wrote a piece concerning Mr. Blackford, who this week did something which was quite astounding. The Scottish National Party have a policy of not voting on devolved issues in other areas like Northern Ireland or Wales or indeed England, if it's an England-only policy in the House of Commons. But many of them, 25 of them, including Mr. Blackford, broke that policy in order to vote to impose abortion and same-sex marriage upon Northern Ireland. Now, apart from breaking the principle, it's depressing to hear somebody who attends a church saying that the woman's right to choose, he supports the woman's right to choose, or he supports same-sex marriage. And I just sometimes wonder if they've even thought about it. It seems to me that Westminster has no business interfering in this in Northern Ireland. And yet these people are so ideologically committed to this particular form of sexual ideology that they are prepared to overturn even their deepest principles. It's how deeply ingrained this in. See, I don't think Mr. Blackford has thought this through. I don't think he's thinking, well, I've worked out what marriage is, I've worked out what gender is, and this is the best way. I think he's just accepted what he's been told in terms of the emperor's new clothes, that if you want to be virtuous, you want to be progressive, you want to be modern, then of course you're going to be for equal marriage, for some and not for others, and you're going to be for abortion because it's the right to choose. I just question whether they have thought beyond the soundbite. And that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to think beyond the soundbite. Because to say, you, for example, that you're for the woman's right to choose, are you saying that a baby that's 39 weeks old in the womb, that a woman has a right to kill that baby? Most people would say no. So when are you saying? 22 weeks, 20 weeks, what's the difference? Are you saying there's not a human being there? Ironically, Mr. Blackford tweeted about Srebrenica and we need to remember the genocide and the thousands who died, whilst at the same time this week having voted for a policy that will kill hundreds of thousands of human beings. There's no consistency, there's no rationality, and ultimately there's no humanity in that. I don't think our politicians realise where all this is going, realise where it all ends. They're reacting. They're being told, do you want to do this because it's nice? And they're not thinking about where it's going to end. Well, here's an example of where it's going to end. These are children on the main Canadian broadcasting network.
I'm Bracken. I'm a 12-year-old hyper queen, meaning a 12-year-old female drag queen. My drag name is also my real name. Simple.
I'm Jason Kerr, and my drag name is Susan B. Anthony.
When you figure out you're gay or trans or something like that, it's not something that happens once you become an adult. It actually is around, like, all the kids of the documentary's age that we start kind of thinking about these things. And to just know that there are other kids that are here doing this, it shows that it's okay to do this and that you're not the only one. It's not weird.
I perform in front of crowds now and they cheer, so I know that I'm doing all right.
Drag has helped me express myself.
It's from a documentary on child drag queens. Now, it's sexually suggestive, it's explicit, it's pedophilic. I'm sure it is. And I think that this is the direction that we are going, the sexualization of children. And people need to really wake up to this. But you say something like this, so a children's TV program does this, and that's fine. But if I question this, so people say, oh, this should not be allowed, this should not be allowed. Or what do they mean? I think you can see what's happened with Amazon. Amazon have banned books by a Catholic psychologist because of LGBT activist pressure. There are others as well. The works of Ann Polk of the Restored Hope Network and pastoral counselor and author Joe Dallas have also had their books pulled because they're about men who struggle with sexual identity or women who struggle with same-sex attraction. And what's happening here is that just the LGBTQ movement just remove anything that dares to challenge their presuppositions, and our corporate cultures just buy into that. Do you know, being in Australia is fascinating. It's a very wealthy country with a lot of wealthy people, but not as many as there were, apparently. The number of millionaires in Australia has decreased from 278,000 in 2017 to 266,000 last year. So Australia is now the 10th place in global rankings for millionaires. You know, there are a lot of people who are very wealthy. And it does appear United States is the number one, then Japan, then Germany, China, France, then the United Kingdom, then Switzerland, then Canada, then Italy, then Australia. But it does seem to me that the whole system is geared towards those having wealth getting more wealth. And one of the ways that's seen is also in terms of with wealth comes power, and sometimes that power is misused. Now, none more so than in the case this week of Jeffrey Epstein, the multimillionaire who's been charged with trafficking young girls for sex. And what's interesting is what's going to come out of all of this, because Epstein was friend with the Clintons, also Donald Trump, and other well-known American politicians. It'll be just fascinating to see what comes out in the wash. But I think the thing that for me is just so depressing is that, and you see it all the time, you see that people who have money and power, you can use it for good. It can be used for good. There are many people who use it for good. But it can also be used for great evil. And in a society where money is almost worshipped, then these people can get away with it. But it's not just money and power that can lead to exploitation. Also, religion can do that as well. And we need to recognize that sometimes there are people who use religious terms, who use the name of Jesus, but use it to make money and use it to exploit. And that's undoubtedly true of someone we've mentioned here before, Paula White, who again this week brought disgrace on the name of Christ by standing in a church and declaring that where she stands is holy ground.
Wherever I go, God rules. When I walk on White House grounds, God walks on White House grounds. When I walked in the river, God walked in the river. When I go into the dry cleaner, that dry cleaning place becomes holy. I had every right and authority to declare the White House as holy ground because I was standing there, and where I stand is holy.
So the White House is holy ground because she's standing there. You just listen to what she's saying. It is blasphemous. It is hubristic. She makes money out of the gospel. And she does so and exploits people. And it does so much harm to the gospel. Richard Dawkins isn't a problem to the church. The televangelists who have the prosperity gospel are a far, far bigger problem and cause so much havoc and do so much harm. But let me add some good news in here, and that this comes from Egypt, where the government have legalized another 127 churches. So there are now over 1,000 approved by the government. And that's important because the persecution of Christians in Egypt has been ongoing. And this is, I think, a significant change. So that's something which we can rejoice in. Let's just leap across the Mediterranean and go to Greece. Now, we've often spoken about Greece and the trouble that's come from the austerity. The Syriza was a radical socialist group who promised a lot. They did promise a lot, and they delivered very, very little. And so now, and the Greek elections, a really important thing, the center-right opposition party, New Democracy, which is basically the old-style conservatism, has come back into power. They certainly are going to be an outright winner. So the young Greeks are leaning towards conservatism, although the turnout was only 57%. Mitsotakis is going to be the new prime minister. Well, we shall see what happens. Jean-Claude Juncker, the outgoing European Commission president, congratulated him for it. The Communist Party was in 5.3%, the centre-left movement for change on it. Was on 8.1%. The fascist party, Golden Dawn, are not going to make enough to get seats within the actual parliament. It's part of the general mess that is in European politics at the moment. But this may be a good sign. And there's another interesting development taking place in Europe, up in Denmark. In a piece of news that I found intriguing, parents seeking a divorce in Denmark are now required to take a mandatory course and wait 3 months before they can separate if they have children under 18 years old. The course is called Cooperation After Divorce, and it's asking people to consider the long-term negative impact of divorce, especially on children. In recent years, the number of children growing up in parents in Denmark with both parents in the home has shrunk from about 87% to 70%. If parents don't take this course within allotted 3 month period, they will remain married. They won't be allowed to divorce. It is a fascinating development. As it is, as we shift west to England, to the United Kingdom, at least, where this piece of news also caught my eye. Do you know, in nurseries, you know, you can't smack children now. You can't smack children in your own home either. What form of discipline can you do? You can have the naughty step, but nurseries are getting rid of the naughty step. And why? Sorry, I'm smiling about this. Because it's negative approaches. There is the potential for children to be labelled with this term without them understanding. It can negatively impact on how adults perceive children as well. And I love this, what one of the directors at Top Days Nurseries said. We promote good behaviour through positive reinforcement. We avoid secluding or reprimanding children for undesired behaviours, and we refrain from labelling children's behaviour as naughty. If a child was throwing hard blocks in the classroom, we would help them identify the impact of their behavior, yeah, and they would be redirected to throw the beanbags in the throwing zone. Redirection enables children to practice the skills they need to develop in a way that is socially appropriate. And instead of naughty steps, we have thinking time, where they can reflect on their behavior. Well, I'm sure it's good for us to reflect, and I'm sure it's good for us to be pointed in a positive direction. But this is the kind of madness that occurs when you take sin out of the human vocabulary and you do not recognize that sometimes people do things that are wrong, and sometimes it's worth saying that, even if it is negative. What's your favorite fast food? Well, for many people in the United States, it's Chick-fil-A, the third largest restaurant chain. Listen to this somewhat fond parody by Tim Hawkins.
Chick-fil-A. I could eat there 7 times a day.
where the people laugh and children play. Oh, I'm in love with Chick-fil-A. Suddenly, I need waffle fries in front of me, with some nuggets and a large sweet tea. Oh, Chick-fil-A, you set me free. Kids get in the...
Now, I use the excuse to play that old song purely and simply because there's a new book out showing how Chick-fil-A has blossomed to become America's third largest restaurant chain. There was a time in the 1980s when it could have gone under, and Steve Robinson has written about this. He used to be Chick-fil-A's chief marketing officer from 1981 to 2015. And he talked about what happened. And what I found fascinating was they set up a corporate purpose on the chain and its employees to, listen to this, to glorify God by being a faithful steward of all that is entrusted to us and to have a positive influence on all who come into contact with Chick-fil-A. What a great way of describing things. Okay, our time is going. A couple of other things to mention in world news. New Zealand beat India, and by the time you get this, either Australia will have beaten England or England will have beaten Australia in the Cricket World Cup. I'm afraid supporting my new nation, Australia. I put a link to an obituary of the Reverend Richard Bewes, a remarkable man. Friend of Billy Graham, a man who's had an enormous influence on the church in the United Kingdom, and is perhaps part of what Greg Sheridan was calling the possible renewal of Christianity in the United Kingdom. And I've also put something to a link to one of the most extraordinary articles I've read in a long, long time. It's by a history teacher, actually, a history writer called Jill Lepore, writing in The New Yorker, and she writes about the death of her friend Jane, and I found it just an incredibly beautiful and moving piece of writing. Let me just give you a little example. The feminism of writers who are mothers is a fetish, but the motherhood of scholars is forbidden. When my son was 4 months old, I tried going to a conference. I missed him too much. I made a rule, no more conferences. People were very mad at me. Didn't I take my professional responsibilities seriously? I got an email from a fellow scholar who accused me of being an intellectual mankey. Didn't I want to get out there, hobnob, curry favour, court support, mix it up, do battle, become a gladiator? I did not. I got pregnant again and I dragged myself through the writing of a second book, figuring that I'd either get tenure or I'd quit. Jane would understand. I wrote in my acknowledgements about my oldest son, ridiculously, and regretted it when a reviewer mocked me. I adopted two new rules. Never again read a review, and never show your colleagues your soft belly, ever. It's beautiful writing, it's a beautiful piece. Highly recommended. I think my time is almost gone. I was going to start doing a chapter from ASK, which has been going really, really well, but I think we'll leave that for this week. And instead, I want to leave you with the quote of the week, which comes from Werner Heisenberg, the father of quantum physics. I love this. He says, "The first gulp from the glass of natural scientists will make you an atheist, but at the bottom of the glass, God is waiting for you." I said I was going to leave you with that, but actually I'm not. You can support this on the Podbean fundraiser. But I'm going to leave you. We're going to play out with a piece of music from Carlos Santana. Probably best piece of music, or best known piece of music, is Black Magic Woman, but the song we're playing is another one of his absolute classics. And what I didn't know was the fact that he is now a Christian. That he became a Christian after his wife, Deborah, left him after 34 years of marriage, and he was faced with suicidal thoughts. He went to a local church, he became a believer, and now wants to be a pastor. I love this. He said, "I was able to remove the anger by forgiving. Forgiveness, man, forgiveness is incredibly liberating, and I'm here to tell you with all my heart and soul it can be done. You can be freed. You have to go through the darkest night of the soul to get to the brightest light of the day." Well, Santana, great guitarist, and great to hear that he's become a Christian. You know, it's great to hear of an Australian Prime Minister who's a believer, or a rock legend who's a believer, or a famous sports person who's a believer. It's wonderful to hear that. But in God's kingdom, we're all equal. And nothing has given me greater joy this week as we play out with Santana to hear of a young girl who wrote me to say that she'd become a Christian, and I was one of the first people she was telling. Well, I rejoiced at that, and we continue to rejoice, and we pray and long for all of you who are listening to this, you and your loved ones and your friends, to come to know the Lord and to know liberty that He gives and brings. God bless you, and if you've got any further news or comments, please feel free to pass them on to you. See you next week.